Seen a lot of change, been through a lot of pain. Some things are not the same as they were a year ago. But all will be okay, I move on each and every day. The past is where it stays, way back a year ago.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Wake and Make podcast, your favorite podcast centered around the maker community. Today's guest is one of my favorite people in the whole world. I say that about all of the guests because it's true. I handpick the people that I want on the podcast because they're my friends. And Jamie Seal today is my friend. Welcome. Welcome. Welcome.
Hello, Dennis. It's so great to talk to you again.
Absolutely. You were on the previous podcast, the Monday Motivation Podcast, and since then, I feel like we've even gotten closer, and we're really attached to the leather maker community and run in the same circles, for lack of better terms. And I'm grateful that you're here. You're one of my favorites.
Well, thank you so much. You're one of my favorites too. And that the leather group is really wonderful to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for taking the time to jump on here. I'm super stoked to discuss a couple topics. As the people that listen to the podcast, I'm sure you guys know, this is less of a Q&A type of style and more just a conversation amongst friends. I bring on the guest as more of like a guest co-host rather than a standard guest. So both Jamie and I will ask ask each other questions back and forth and just get into a conversation. So, and also, guys, for future episodes, if you have topics that you want us to discuss, please reach out, share this, comment on it, all of those things. So with that said, your style of work, Jamie, is one of my absolute favorites. You're my favorite bag maker, hands down. No disrespect to any of our other friends that make bags. It's just your style of work I feel I mostly relate to. You have a very kind of unique, for lack of better terms, air quotes, alternative kind of look, a bit kind of gothic, in my opinion. Can you describe the look of your products a little bit more?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you very much. That means a lot coming from you. I try to, and it is like you were talking about, it is a little bit hard to describe the style without sounding like, you know, you're in the middle of a hot topic in the early 2000s.
I love it.
The word edgy is one that I don't like very much, but it's the easiest word to use and the most accessible word. But I sort of try to bridge the gap between a more luxury look and a harder and more alternative look. So we sort of take elements from like finer designer handbag aesthetics and mix them with a lot of hardware, a lot of like pointy designs and a lot of straps in the work that we do. And we sort of bring it together to mash up the alternative and luxury style.
Do you get people that are kind of maybe in like the, I don't know, but like the like bondage community, or does the word or term bondage get thrown around when people, your fan base, describe your work?
It definitely gets thrown around, and that is what we try to be on the borderlines of, not totally into it, but I try to offer an aesthetic that says it without saying it. And yeah, so that's where there are a lot of really great brands and really great designers out there who go all in with that, and a lot of them that stay totally away from it. But I think the writing the line between being super edgy, super alternative, and being designer, that's kind of where I try to stay, and where I've been I feel like I'm coming into my style a lot better this year. So
I couldn't agree more. I've seen you advance within your style and your just the work that you produce. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of yours. Like I absolutely adore it. If I carried a handbag, which maybe some men do, I totally support that, whatever. I would totally rock it. I think that it is, it's so cool. And you riding that kind of riding the fence on that world of the bondage side, but also the high end side. Do you have people reaching out to you that want you to do custom work that's more centered around that kind of lifestyle? Do you get requests based on that?
Not so much. We get,
no.
Yeah, the most of the requests that we get were for fanny packs, backpacks. We had a lot of requests for like the new harnesses that we do, like the over the clothes harnesses. We had a ton of requests for those. And then when I finally decided to like face my fear of working with like human sizing, it really paid off. It really,
oh, good.
Yeah, that really took off. We've been making a lot of harnesses and I love it. It's a lot of fun. It's, you know, there's a thing where like bag makers typically hate making straps for their bags. Like it's the worst part of it. But when it's a strap for a harness, I'm like, yeah, this is fun.
You love it. Yeah. The harnesses that you're making. And I think that there's a trend going into that. And I love it. I think that it's cool. I'm sure some of the people that are listening to this, maybe you have, there's that English girl that does the like get ready with me TikTok videos. Are you familiar with that?
You know, I was just going to say, I'm not on TikTok a lot, but I'm trying to get into it. But
yeah, I think the first thing is, well, we're going to discuss TikTok specifically here in a bit, but I think that seeing her other than seeing other people, there's a trend in it. You're right at the right place at the right time with those. And I'm so stoked for you. I'm glad that worked out. I think so often, at least in my experience, every Sunday I do a thing called Selfish Sunday where I make something for myself. And it's just to help with my mental health and help create less of a burnout. But I'll make something for myself and post it through my stories. And then all of a sudden, that's what people want from me. And so I start prototyping it, right? When I make something for myself, it's like proof of concept. And then somebody wants it. And then I'm like, well, let me prototype this because I'm sending this out to you. Like, I want to make sure that it's the best possible thing. And then by the time the prototype's done, I get ghosted on a lot of those things and I'm like, dang, I just got like through this, but hopefully, you know, it's hit and miss. I think that it can be tricky, but I'm so stoked that that's working out for you with the harnesses. Cause they're awesome. So cool.
Thank you. It's really daunting to break into the side of fashion where I have to worry about sizing, mainly because the brand that I try to create is one that is not only accepting but supportive of every type of person out there, no matter like gender, size, anything. And sizing is a really touchy topic to work with. So when I developed my size charts, I put some polls out on Instagram about what labeling worked for people, what made them comfortable, what they liked to see. And I came out with like letter sizes instead of numbers or anything. One thing I wanted to do instead of the letter sizing that people liked even more was like a different like name per each size. But for the sake of confusion with people who aren't used to sizing like that, I did stick with like a successive letter set for the sizing.
That's genius. And I love that. I'm very much the same way. I want to make people as comfortable as possible. This is something that I've been really thinking about, not so much in my business, but just like in my personal, this personal like growth phase is it does no harm to me and takes no effort to respect people and respect their wishes. So, and that's obviously can lead into a very, very much a broader topic. But when it comes to that specifically, I think that's cool. So cool, Jamie. Like, I think it's a very innovative way of caring about your customers. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it's just all about making people feel the best as exactly who they are. So that was the leading sort of motivation behind doing harnesses that would be flattering on all body types and working toward sizing that was scaled up appropriately, where a lot of, you know, a lot of most all fast fashion just sort of does a plug and play, add inches here method that, you know, when it scales up, it doesn't look good. And it takes minimal more effort to just make something look cool and badass on any body type and shape and size.
The concept of doing sizing without a human being, like present, the person that you're sizing it to, gives me an instant panic attack. Like, even just designing like sandals that I'm doing right now. Like, I'm like, you know, in preparation of summer, I'm trying to get some kind of going so I can get them out there. And first I was like, man, how am I going to get the actual shoe size for people? Sandals are different than shoes. Like,
right.
And, you know, through our community, a friend of ours, I believe it was our friend Sarah, was like, hey, here's a good resource. So I grabbed those. And I'm like, okay. And kid size, adult size, you know, women, men, whatever, like European sizing, whatever it is. Then I'm making it. And then I'm sizing the strap on the top for the top of my foot, because I'm trying to go to the prototyping phase of making it. And I realized, like, how am I going to do this for every single person and every single size? Like, that strap that goes on the top of your foot is going to be different for everybody. Like, how do I even, like, and I can't imagine when you're doing like a full upper body harness that's as fitting as possible. That's crazy.
Yeah, one thing that has really helped out a lot is that they're all adjustable. So it's, you know, I put in buckles wherever something might need, like, you know, a quarter of an inch more here or less there or more in the back. But that really has made things fit a lot better for a lot of people.
Yeah, I know for myself, even doing belts for people, in my experience, people tell me the size of belt that they want to be, not the size that they are. And they don't take the proper measurements. I go through it. I explain to them. It arrives there and it's too small. And I'm like, how is that my fault? Like, it's hard, you know, like, other than, well, it doesn't fit right. I'm like, well, measure it. And then go back to the conversation that we had where you told me what size you wanted.
And I think vanity sizing in the fast fashion industry has really destroyed everyone's perception of what they might look like in something, where having a sort of like a letter set lets people just, you know, be who they are. Because if you get something that's too small for you, it's going to look way worse than if you would size up. So it's vanity sizing has really done a number on everyone, and how you can go to a store and get one number size in five different stores, like at the mall, and you line them up next to each other and they're all just totally different.
They're all different. You know, I figured that out when our friend Austin, who is like a raw denim handmade jeans, not just jeans, but just denim guy.
Yeah, and Austin's awesome.
He rips. That's like one of my good friends. I was just talking to him yesterday, but he explained through the process of me getting like custom jeans made. He's like, when you go through a factory or you go to a store, you're the let's just use Levi's or Diesel or whatever. Like when they drop their dies to cut out layers and layers of denim, it naturally bows out at the bottom. So the pieces of denim at the bottom are going to be bigger than the ones at the top.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I never thought about that. That's wild.
Yeah, it's a slight thing. And think about it, if you stacked a couple pieces of leather together, and or even when you cut leather, if you look at the bottom of it, it frays out a bit.
Right.
Slightly, but over, you know, layers and layers of denim, it's gonna bow out at the bottom even more.
Right.
People spend a lot of money to buy our products. Like, yeah. There's no way around it because of material cost and time to make handmade leather products. It's a luxury item. So if people are spending that money to spend a half an hour, an hour, 2 hours even talking to them, it's so beneficial. Like now that I've kind of changed that approach. I've seen my sales go up so much from like a lead, people that are inquiring. If I can get them on the phone or on a Zoom call, preferably a Zoom call. If you have any kind of sales skills, you're going to be able to turn that lead into a job.
That's awesome. And I do not have any sales skills at all. I have tried so hard to work on that over and over again. And I just, I was raised in a small business family. So we, you know, our lifestyle was very, very frugal. We, you know, my mom was always really conscious about what we were spending, and, that was how she was raised too. And that it's really beneficial, but when it comes to trying to think the opposite way, where I'm trying to not necessarily trying to get people to buy things, but trying to just display the quality enough to get people to buy things, I'm just like thinking to myself, like, wow, this is really expensive. I would never buy it.
I think that's a common ground that, I mean, it's an easy thing to joke about within pretty much any maker community, like all of the people that I had on, because we're not our target market. And what I've really come to terms with is I don't need to impress my peers with anything, because how often do you sell to other, you know, leather smiths? Probably not that often. Like,
right. Yeah. Almost never.
Almost never. Like there's things that I want to buy from my friends, or I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like so many things. And I'm like, but I can't afford that. Like there's no way that I can afford that. And I have the materials and the skill, like maybe not as good as the specialties that you being a bag maker and a harness maker, like all of these things, I may not have the skills, but I got Sundays, and you know, my selfish Sundays are making something for myself or for a family member or trying out something new. And so it's tricky. And I've kind of come to terms with that. Like, even with social media, like I used to care so much if our peers were like excited about something that I was doing. And I think that I've come to terms with the fact that that's just a trauma response from the years that I tattooed and trying to seek approval from my mentors and my peers within that industry, that now I'm just like, I post something, if it gets 20 likes on Instagram or it gets 300 likes on Instagram, I just leave it and go, all right, whatever. Like I have, like, it's so hard to do that, but like, it's tricky. And then I realize everyone's numbers on photos on Instagram are down, and they're only going to get worse because they want video.
Mm-hmm. And everything, you know, in the beginning, the algorithm changing and affecting everyone so terribly, it was really awful, and it still is. But one thing I'm finding as time passes and it just keeps getting worse and worse on Instagram for engagement and likes and everything, is that I'm getting a lot more resilient towards the idea of being rejected online.
It's so true, because The best thing too is that we, you know, we're not unique, and I hope we're not unique in the sense that we have a really, really tight, like tight community, right? Like 30 people that we talk to all day, every day, like yes. Like for the last over year, like every single day, every holiday, it's happy Thanksgiving, guys, or someone's birthday.
And I love it. It's great.
The first steps of you know, a child of one of the people in our group, like Cole.
That
kind of stuff is an every single day thing. So we're privy to being like, hey man, have you guys noticed that numbers on photos on Instagram are going down? And everyone's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I just thought everyone hated me. Okay, yeah. I guess only Instagram hates us all, so whatever.
The support that group offers is so great. And it's just nice to talk to people who are in the same boat most of the time. And it's very validating, like, oh, hey guys, it's February, no one's buying anything, and we're all terrified right now.
Yeah, there is a support, or even like, there's support on so many different things in the sense that, you know, whether somebody is feeling down for a couple weeks or whatever, like, I'm me being one of those, and, you know, whatever, I'm not going to say anything about anyone else, I can only speak for myself, but people will reach out and be like, hey, I'll get phone calls from people like, hey, Dennis, you doing okay? Like, you all right? Yeah. Haven't seen you in the group so much lately. And I'm like, you know, like I can discuss things. Like, we have friends, like real friends within it. Right? Like it's really cool in that sense. And anyone that's listening to this right now, I highly recommend finding your community group. And if you don't have one, make your own. Find 10 people that you talk to regularly on Instagram and make a group chat immediately, and just do that, because the amount of support, and not only that, but you learn so much faster by having people that are different. And if you can get people that are better than you within that community, you're better off.
Yes, 1,000%. That's the best advice. And that's also the best thing that I ever did, was reaching out to the group, like just randomly hopping on the Clubhouse room. In the last year, my confidence in my skills and my confidence in what I was doing in general has increased tenfold, because it was so hard going at it alone to, you know, tell myself that, yeah, this is good. And even though it's not really selling, it's, you know, I'm still doing the right thing. And now that there are so many like extremely supportive, just all around wonderful people in that group that I talk to and see what they're doing. And it's just, I don't know, like it's so many warm fuzzies that I'm just not used to. Like, what is this?
It's crazy. And I remember that time specifically when you started jumping into the Clubhouse group, and then into kind of like the behind, not behind the scenes, but the group chat through, you know, via Instagram, and the conversations that we had there, and where there's not just you, but a handful of people, and seeing that confidence grow, myself included, because I was so new when we started that it kind of is, it's so cool. And because there's so many people, you can kind of jump in and out of conversations within that group that appeal to you. Like somebody might be talking about sewing machines for the beginning part of the day, and then they're like, hey, does somebody else, hey, do you guys know where to get this particular piece of hardware? Or, hey, I'm trying to think of something recently that happened, but it's just like, hey, I need a suggestion for this. And then someone's like, hey, have you tried this? Or where'd you get that product? Or what did you order? And there's no one that's like, no, these are mine. Like,
right.
I don't want to tell anybody about these. And then something simple like, hey man, like I haven't like I'm just having a hard time. Everyone kind of comes and gives you like a digital hug and makes you feel validated.
It's so great. It is really awesome. There was one time like a month or two ago that I was trying out the buckle guy, like the feet studs for the first time. And of course, the first time I ever used it, I put it on a bag. And instead of testing it out responsibly on some scrap, and it turned out that the post on it was too long for what I put it on, and I had this gap there, and I was in a complete panic, because at the point I put feet studs on the bags, the bag is 90% done.
Yep.
And there's no going back. I would have to cut it out and ruin the whole thing. And I got on the chat and was just furiously typing to everyone, like, oh no, what do I do? And everyone jumped in immediately, and they were posting pictures of tools, and they were like, do this, do that. Like, what if you would use a hacksaw and like cover the rest of it? And that was what we ended up having to do. But it was like the most incredible feeling of like kinship, and like, I don't know, everyone was on one team instead of like the previous, I don't know. I feel like in the last few years, people in general in the crafting and small business community have really shifted their perspective, where it was like kind of every person for themselves. And now it's like, hey, we're all in this together, and life is weird, and we're going to help each other now. So,
yeah, I think it's awesome. And to go back to what you were saying, I'm only laughing because it's relatable. Like, yeah, with the foot thing, it's like, there's anytime I try out a new product or a new technique, I always think there's a voice in my head that says, try this on a sample thing, right? Every single time. And I go, no, I'm confident that I got this. And 100% of the time, I don't got it. And it happens every single time. So, you know, because we're friends, that I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you so that we both don't cry.
Yeah, and, right. That's the only way to do it.
Yeah, it's crazy like that. And then also the difference in, you know, when you said a few years ago to now, as far as the community, how everything is a community. I can only speak for myself. I wasn't part of the, you know, the leather crafting world a couple years ago, but one thing that I noticed is, and who I automatically think of as a person that kind of put community before competition, is Parker from Stock and Barrel, who really, really pushed that saying, and also kind of opened up a world to me personally with that. And that, and I'm secure enough in the products that I make. And I think, just like you doing what you do, competition really isn't, I don't think competition is really a thing. I send packages out to New Zealand, to Japan, to Mexico City, to all of these places. Like, we live in the digital world where we can sell online, that if there was me, you, and 12 other people that went to the same farmer's market every single week, that would be an issue because it would be oversaturated. But even as I post things now, like on TikTok or places like that, people are like, oh my God, this is a lost art. I never see this. My grandpa used to do stuff like this. Like, leather work is so cool. I'm like, oh no, there's still a whole thing. So people are seeing it still for the first time. So there's still possibilities to gain a market and a fan base.
And that's so true about Parker. He really opened that dialogue of like, hey, the world is a really big place and there's room for all of us in it. And it was really unique. And especially in the leatherworking community, you know, he sort of shifted the conversation to like, let's help each other. It sucks a lot less when we're talking to each other and being friendly and everything. But that was, you know, it's such a great thing to be a part of when you can reach out and ask about methods and, you know, whether it's pattern making, hardware, or construction methods, that's stuff that always used to be super top secret and no one would ever share their secrets. And now it's just an open book. And I think that's really great because you can take one exact method that someone uses and apply it to something that is 1,000% different and is going to, you know, improve your own craft and not threaten theirs at all.
Right. And I think that what I've realized is as soon as I learn something, if I teach it to somebody else, my ability to do that specific skill improves immediately. Like,
yeah,
that's the reason why I'm so in love with education as far as teaching, because every single time I'll tell the class that I teach or, you know, the private course that I teach, I'm like, just so you know, I learned more from this than you did. And
yeah,
it makes them feel good. And it's the truth. Like, you learn so much from teaching others. I love it. Something that I wanted to discuss with you, which I think you do really well and is extremely hard in today's day and age, is being able to separate your personal views on current events and what's happening in whether, you know, our community, the community of the world. How are you able to do that? And what are some strategies? Because it is incredibly difficult for me.
It is very difficult, especially with everything that happens seemingly on a daily basis right now and for the last few years. But for me, it's a bit of riding the line still, because being a small business owner, the draw of a small business operated by one or two people versus a large corporation that just paints their logo rainbow colors in June and then does nothing anytime else. The benefit and sort of responsibility of being a person is that, you know, politics and your views and the way you treat people are a little bit tied into your business. So I think it is important to talk about it at least a little bit and to do things responsibly where a big corporation wouldn't. The benefit of a small business is that you can make donations to organizations that you really believe in making a difference. And there are some businesses who their business identity is, or small businesses, I mean, where they are very political and they're very vocal about their beliefs. And I think that's good and important for them to do. I take a little bit of a more mild stance on it.
Well, I think it's scary for me. Like, I am, I'm really opinionated, and you and I can have discussions privately. And, you know, even within our community group, I try not to, because statistically speaking, if you say something opinionated, you're going to offend 50% of the people that you say that to. And that's just, well, I mean, I guess on my stance, I would offend 47% of the people, statistically speaking. But that's just math. But I'm super opinionated on what it is that I believe. And I'm also educated on what I believe. And the hardest part that I find in this current situation, especially the like immediate situation, and I'm trying to like, you know, tap dance around the specifics of it, but because I don't want to offend anybody, but certain things to me, like me, and I always say this, like me at work is different than me at a barbecue. Me as a business owner is different than me getting lunch or us talking privately. And I try to do my best, but it's getting harder and harder by the day.
Yeah.
I'm fearful of it because, like I said, with the current situation, and again, kind of tap dancing around the things, I'm in the majority in the sense of where my views are 70% of the rest of the country believe what I believe. And you can read between the lines where I stand on certain things, but it's one of those things where I don't want to make waves because I don't want my brand to be watered down by politics, religion, a lack of politics or a lack of religion, whatever that is. I don't want it. I don't want the quality of my work to be overlooked by my views on certain things. And even more so, I don't want to get into arguments using my branded social media. I don't want to write on somebody's post or comment on their story or whatever it is, and then it says 21 grams, and then they identify this with my brand, not me personally.
Right. Yeah. And that's, yeah, it's like you said, it is very hard to try to remain on a surface level neutral in today's world, because there are a lot of things that are happening that are really worth speaking out about and that are really important to speak out about. So it's hard to start doing that when, you know, your mortgage is due next week. And it's there's a lot of fear involved with that. But for a lot of the issues that I do talk about a little bit, you know, paying the bills is a little bit different than whether or not people have the right to exist. So it's hard to talk about things sometimes. It's hard to face people not liking you for something that you said versus something that you did.
That's the internet. That yeah. Sums up the internet. Like,
right.
And we live in this world where if I saw someone in real life saying something compared to them posting something without sometimes not their not even their text, but let's say for sake of conversation, their text, not their voice, not their face, not their personality whatsoever. They're just copying and pasting a meme or whatever. Compared to sitting down and having a meal with this person, totally different. I can do, like, I have the ability to respectfully disagree with people, but that gets thrown out the window for everyone. I think we're all guilty of it when we feel very courageous behind a keyboard. And you can't get punched in the face through a computer. And that's just a fact. Like, and it's just one of those things. And I was, you know, joking around with a friend of mine who we have polar opposite beliefs in pretty much everything, but we've made, and he's a good friend of mine. That says a lot. And we've come to the conclusion, like, if we're going to discuss these things, we only send voice memos, because when you hear someone's voice, you can hear the cadence in their voice and like the tone of things. And it's mellowed out so much more. And it's really good. It's a lot better. And man, it's just tricky. And I condemn you, because everyone's entitled to their opinions, even businesses. I support people's freedoms to be able to make the stance of their business, and they can do whatever they want. But I'm curious. I would love to talk to somebody that does make their business model based around a political or religious or anything controversial, because I see it within our world. And I wonder how that either benefits them or it doesn't benefit them. You know, that's just something that I'm curious about.
Yeah. And in that sort of like the topic that we're on, one of the things that I shy away from is posting on literally any holiday. So this sums it up a little better, why I do and don't post about certain things. I never want to seem like I'm talking about a topic or taking a stance to gain approval or to get more sales. And that's that's what's important to me. So I'll say anything on my personal account, because that's me being mouthy. But it's when I see a lot of you know, like the big businesses posting for Pride Month, I'm like, you're not really pro human rights. Like, you just want them to buy from you, and that's terrible.
It's funny that you say that, because that's one of my biggest pet peeves, is when a big corporation leeches off a social rights movement, yeah, or anything where you're like, but you exploit your LGBTQ community that works for you all year long,
right? Or
you support your minority groups that work for you all year long, but you have a fist up when it's convenient for you.
Right. That's
just a sign of that. That's just capitalism, right? They see yeah. an opportunity yeah. to cash grab, and they're like, what's trending on Twitter right now? What's right. the social movement that we can get behind? And right. they don't care. The CEOs are flying in their private jets over yeah. and looking over everyone.
Yeah.
The ruling class doesn't care about us. Always remember that. They don't care about you and I. They don't care about what our beliefs are. They don't care about any of that stuff. They care about the bottom lines, and their marketing is geared to social movements, because you spark emotion in people, and emotion is a great way to make sales. It just is.
Yep. And I'm terrified of seeming like I'm virtue signaling for anything. Because, you know, I want the work that I do and the things that I make and the causes that I support to, make a difference instead of make money. It just feels so dirty to I don't know, sort of post on specific holidays. Not that I think anyone who does is like dirty at all. I love seeing people stand up for things, but I don't ever want to be associated with trying to make money off of a certain.
I totally get it. And I see that as well. And I don't care when it's a small business, because they probably are committed to the cause that they are. Like,
yeah.
these are our friends. Like, I know them well, and maybe they're not, but that's for them to deal with. When I see corporations do it, it bothers me, because those people don't care. Like,
right.
they don't care if the tides turned and it was something else cool the following week.
Right.
That's what they're all about. And it doesn't matter. And the reason why I say that is because I've worked for Fortune 500 companies, and I know they don't care about us. Like,
right.
they care about the dollar that in it. To me, my, I don't know how to say this, like, us as small businesses, if you're not actually doing something and you're just posting about it, you're not doing anything. Like, don't talk about it, be about it. I'd rather make an impact in someone's life than look for an opportunity to tell people that I'm making an impact, or right. present myself in that way. And
yeah,
it's hard, because my convictions and my beliefs are so like rock solid. My beliefs in equality, just generally that every person should be treated the same. But yeah. if I post something with the word equality, what is that going to like? And I think about this all the time, because I want people to know who I am. And this podcast is more based on that. People are going to, you know, people are going to look through my Instagram or TikTok, and they're going to see a product. And if they're really interested in like who I am, they can come here and listen. And I'm learning to kind of pull off the layers of my personality here, because I'm not selling a product here. I'm right. selling a conversation amongst my peers and people that I admire, my friends, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I really don't care here in this,
right.
in this space. Like,
yeah.
it's going to be different at different times.
Way back a year ago.